Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Half. There certainly is lots going on. Obviously, the PGA Championship, the first round, and there's some good news from an Australian perspective there. Ash Barty won her match in the Rogers Cup, which is a really big event in the lead-up to the US Open. She beat Elise Cornet overnight, so she's through to the quarterfinals there. And then, of course, probably the biggest news of all was Alan Djokovic was on the television last night, and that was really exciting.
I'll take your word for that. I'll take your word. I'm sure it was. Jacko would have been good fun. I'm sure. Was he on the front bar, was he?
He was on the front bar. Right. It was just like, turn the phones off, lock the doors, just sit down and watch.
A bit like when he was playing.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly right.
Bit like when he was playing. He was a one-man show.
Mm.
Well, I'm sure.
I'm a bit worried about our man in here today.
Adam Romanaskis.
Yep.
The Bombers champion and superstar, talent manager to the Stars.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Why would he be worried about you?
I don't know. Look, I must admit, after yesterday's show, it's icy between us. It is. Usually where there's a couple of text exchanges, but it's icy.
What's happened?
Well, you know, I just thought there was a case of bullying yesterday in the end. That's what I thought. He doesn't agree with me, so it's icy.
Have you lodged a formal complaint?
Nearly.
I did hear a conversation with the boss on the way out.
Yeah. So, look, we'll see how today progresses. But I too watched Alan Djokovic last night. I loved him as a kid. Loved him. He was just, when the ball was near Alan or Alan had the ball, something happened. Whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, something happened. And usually it was good. If you look at his actual record, it's nearly off the charts sort of record.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is what it is.
I can tell you that in his time at Melbourne, how many games do you think he played at Melbourne when you think of Alan Djokovic?
48.
I would have said 62.
47.
Oh, that's good by you, Rema.
And I reckon he kicked 256 goals.
237.
Yeah. Oh, so is that a guess or an answer?
It's a guess.
I don't know. I don't know the exact answer to that.
I've got
a more impressive stat. Because the thing with Alan Djokovic was that he missed a lot of goals as well. One day against Hawthorn, he kicked 4 goals, 10.
Yes.
I find this quite incredible. From his 47 games at Melbourne...
208, remember?
208 goals.
Yeah. Mm.
He had 360 shots at goal, or 360 scores. So that's an average of 7.66 shots per game. That's pretty impressive, and that's not including the out-of-bounds on the full.
Out-of-bounds on the full.
The most shots he had in any one game, he kicked 11 goals, 8, against North Melbourne at the MCG.
Was that the same day Peter Dacos kicked 13 goals against Brisbane at Carrara that night, when they were going head-to-head?
It might have... No, I think that was a Friday night game.
Was it?
Anyway, from his 47 games, 16 times he kicked 6 goals or more. That's a pretty good record.
16 times he kicked 6 or more?
From his 47 games.
That's pretty good.
Melbourne. And then he had a year off and then played at the Bulldogs and played 6 games and kicked about 2 goals and then he disappeared. So it was, I just loved him.
He was a fantastic talent. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that, Alan Djokovic. And Enigma hasn't been seen or sighted much since.
No, so it was quite a...
So it was a coup.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. It was just brings back a lot of memories, you know, growing up trying to replicate the scissor kick goal. Remember that he kicked against North Melbourne off the pack? And, he's great.
I just received a text message. His debut year... For Melbourne, 14 games, 71 goals, 57.
That's true. Yeah. 1991. 1991.
He played the first game and then missed about 6 or 7, kicked 60 goals in the reserves and came back and did that in the seniors. So I think he won the reserves and the seniors goal kicking in the same year.
Yeah, he had a patch through that year from round 15, which was his fourth game of the season, after coming back in round 10 and then playing round 14. Must have injured himself or something. He had a patch 8-6-6-8-7-11 between 15 and 20.
There's only one other player that had that sort of impression early in his career, which was Adrian McAdam.
Oh!
Yes.
Adrian McAdam, he went berserk in his first couple of games, didn't he?
Yeah, his first... I reckon he had 11 or something. I reckon he had 25 goals or something or other in his first
He had an
four
extraordinary
or five
start. Yeah, I'll find that out for you. But he had an extraordinary start to his career as well. And again, someone that disappeared quite quickly as well.
He started 7-10-6.
Yeah. 7-10-6. Keep going.
No, I will. But they're his first three games of AFL footy. Yeah. Extraordinary. Then he had 3-3-9, 1-3-4-6-3-5, dot, dot, as we say in cricket, 3-4-1. So he kicked 68 goals in his 17 games first season.
And then he had Wayne Carey in his team and John Longmire.
Yeah.
And he was still doing that.
This is my.
But what I want to know is what was his forward pressure rating?
No, I'm not sure how many tackles he had. Well, he had one tackle throughout his first 3 weeks, and then he had seven tackles for the season in 1993.
There is an unbelievable website called AFL Tables. Now, I use that quite often just when I'm looking at my own players that I manage for stats and the like. But what I find myself doing quite often is I go back to my favourite players of the 80s and 90s and just, oh, wonder what he did in that year. Wonder what he did that, you know. And before you know it, 2 hours is gone. Mm. Just gone out of your day where you've looked at 30 or 40 players and looked at particular games and what they did. Like Duncan Callaway was one of my absolute favourites at Richmond as a kid.
The glove.
Because he played on the bigger type of opponents. Then I'd sort of go back and look at his game against Gary Ablett Sr. Go look at against Jason Dunstall and those guys. And yeah, he was unbelievable, Duncan Callaway. For an he was your height, Whitey. And was not an entertainer.
No, he wasn't.
No, he was a long way from being an entertainer. But he's a fantastic player.
Unlike yesterday.
At the Cotton Golf Club.
No,
don't go down there. Don't go down
there. Would have been preferred lies. That's cheating.
No, we didn't have
preferred lies.
We just played.
Course wet.
Course was very wet. I can understand why.
No preferred lies.
I can understand why the Bendigo races were called off the day before. It was really wet.
Right.
But if I'm quite serious here, we won't talk about what I did because it'll take too long. But the Kyneton Golf Course, seriously, if you are looking for somewhere to play, it's an hour out of Melbourne. It is a really interesting golf course. The par fours up there, the collection of par fours, are really interesting. Lots of dog legs, lots of different holes. No hole is the same. The greens are in excellent condition. It was $25. Put the money in the box and away you go. Mm. It was just a really, really enjoyable experience yesterday. So it was course number 113 on the roster.
I think there's an audit. Needs to be an audit.
I've got it written down. You can have a look at them if you like. But it was a really, really good experience. It's only an hour out of Melbourne.
I reckon I'll be right. If you don't mind. Yeah. But speaking of golf, yesterday when we went off air, we were alerted to the fact, the news that everyone now is fully aware of with the passing of Jared Lyle, just a week after suggesting that no longer could he fight after 20 years of taking on this insidious disease, acute myeloid leukemia. For the third time, he did pass away yesterday, of course. And we, on behalf of the Breakfast Club and all the team, do send our best and condolences to Brian, to Luce, to Gemma, and the entire Lyle family, because as has been discussed a lot on this station, and this program particularly, Jared was a very, very good friend of the situation. He'd come on and talk golf with us. He'd talk about his situation. We'd meet him across the road for coffee when he was having his treatment and have some breakfast with him. And he was just a wonderful human being. And it was a very sad day yesterday. Even though we knew it was coming, it was a very, very sad day. And I think there's some wonderful stories that have been written in the press in the last 24 hours. And there's some wonderful tributes from the Golf Channel, and particularly put out a ripper one, I thought, yesterday. If you want to get yourself ready for that, it's pretty emotional, of course, but there's some fantastic tributes for Jared Lyle after a very sad passing yesterday. So from us here at RSN 927, we send our best to the family.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I think the thing that stands out to me is that through particularly his recent battle he had, how it could have very easily been bitter about the world and so forth, but he had such a positive outlook on things. And as you said, Half, you know, we'd often see him across the road and while we were having our breakfast, and he'd sit down and have a chat to us. And he was so positive and just so happy, and you'd have a laugh with him. And despite what was going on in his life, he had just such a sunny disposition, if you like. It was that was the thing that was quite awe-inspiring.
It's amazing how many people you can touch in 36 years only on this earth, unfortunately. And he was so brilliant at that. But my thoughts are with his wife and family there. You know, they've gone through it also with Jared, and they're going to need a lot of support over this next period of time. So hopefully they get what's absolutely required and we can all put our arms around them.
The lasting memory I'll have is when he was able to get back on to the Australasian tour and played in the Masters, Australian Masters.
2013, was it?
Yeah, I was actually on the first tee when he walked to the tee, and it was just such an emotional experience for him. But then when everyone saw him... Mm. Everyone, well, not everyone, most people had tears running down their face as he teed off on the first tee to get his tournament underway. It was something that you'll never forget. It was quite an extraordinary experience.
Absolutely right. I remember that day vividly. I was on air in another station watching it all unfold and got a bit emotional myself at that time. So a very, very sad day. And the golfing world certainly won't forget and hasn't forgotten Jared Lyle nor his family. They'll be certainly looked after. I think there's the Victorian Golf Awards tonight, where I think it's going to be a fair tribute paid. And, of course, there's plenty of players on course. And the PGA Tour have been fantastic as well with their tributes and dedication to the family. So a lot of players out there dedicating and wearing the yellow for Jared today at the PGA Championship. The kickoff of another season of Premier League action in England. And Russell Milton is our man on the spot to keep us up to date with all the latest information. He's back again for another season. Doesn't seem that long ago. Russ, good morning.
G'day, boys. It does come round quick, doesn't it? Especially when you've got the World Cup sandwiched in between. There's no stop for football, is there? So, but, yeah, good to speak to you, lads. You all right?
Yeah, we're good. Does it come around too quick, Russ? I mean, because we've talked about this in our major sport back here in Australia with the AFL season, sort of questioning whether it's too long and you sort of get fatigue and there's not big enough gap. Well, when it comes to the Premier League, the gap is 3 months.
Yeah, well, it's less than that. It's 2 months. And, you know, when you've got the World Cup, and, I mean, the vast majority of these players will be playing in that, wouldn't they? And, you know, some of them probably get a couple of weeks. You can argue that they earn the big money, but, you know, bodies do need a rest. And, you know, it's going to be, it's and when they go away on tours, you know, the teams themselves are away on tour sort of the end of June now. So, yeah. You know, and if you're playing, you know, say you get to the FA Cup final or your playoffs or whatever in the season finishes in mid-May, you know, you're not going to get a lot of time off. So, it's a big money thing, isn't it, the Premier League. So, you know, the world sort of demands a lot of them and... these players are very busy and the clubs are very busy, so it does seem very quick, doesn't it? You know, it's every year it seems quicker, and I don't know whether it's because we're getting older, lads, but it soon comes around, doesn't it?
So, Russ, you speak about big money. Which club has spent the most money through the off season?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about winners and losers, I would say there hasn't been that much big money spent, Adam, really, on certain individuals. Riyad Mahrez is one that springs to mind. Who's gone from Leicester? I mean, he was, you know, terrific for Leicester, wasn't he? He's gone to Man City. He's probably their big signing, then, you know, the big signing, along with, you know, there's a keeper today. Kepa has gone to Kepa, the keeper. How's that for one? Yeah, he's gone to from Bilbao to Chelsea. So 71 million, I think that was. So and then Liverpool spent 70 odd million on Alisson, the Brazilian goalkeeper. So. Apart from that, there's been a lot of movement, but no real massive transfers. I mean, we spoke in the past, and there's been, like, you know, billions spent on transfers at some point, and it's been ridiculous, but not so much this time. But, you know, in terms of winners and losers, I'll say Liverpool have done really well. That they've got to bridge that, you know, that gap of, what, 15, 16 points, whatever it was, to Man City last year. You know, they've bought well. I think they spent, you know, 170-odd million. So, you know, I think... and what he has addressed, Jurgen Klopp, is the goalkeeper, as we said. So... you know, they're going to be, I think they're going to be right up there. Whether that's enough to challenge Man City, we'll see. You know, Klopp's going to be under a little bit of pressure. He's, what, 4 years and not won a trophy. So, yeah, we'll see where that one goes. As I said, City haven't done an awful lot. I think Pep Guardiola probably thinks he's got the squad there that's good enough. He's added a couple of minor players, you would say squad fillers, and then he's added Mahrez, as we just said. Arsenal have done their business early doors. It's going to be a strange one at Arsenal this season with a new manager. You know, new impetus, different types of challenges for the players. They're probably going to look more organised. They signed five or six players. Is that going to be enough to get them in the top four? Many people are saying no. I think they're going to be teetering on that. Probably going to be closer. Spurs, YT, have done no signings at all. The first team in the history of the Premier League to not make any signings. And they've gone coming for a lot of stick, Daniel Levy, especially the chairman. What do you think about that one? It's a bit of a strange one, that, isn't it, with the new ground that everyone's going to be excited for with no new players. It's a strange one for Spurs, isn't it, YT?
Is the world's greatest form analyst. And he's getting ready for the Friday form with us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Dino.
Good morning, Harp.
Would a loan situation work in the AFL, Dino?
Yeah, he sprung that on me too quickly, I'm afraid.
Now, what about Celine Dion before we get into the racing tomorrow at headquarters? How did Celine go?
She went well. Very solid.
Favourite song?
It's All Coming Back to Me Now.
Yes.
It was a very big production.
Great. Big crowd? Did you sell out?
2 days, yeah. 2 nights she was packed out.
Who was supporting her?
A girl called Veronique Decaire, and if you look her up on YouTube, she is outstanding too.
Oh, yeah.
Does musical impressions.
Right, okay. Mm.
What do you mean musical impressions? Like, is that like other singers? Right.
Yeah, other singers from all different genres.
Right.
Nice work.
She sort of does the trombone or the guitar
with her voice.
No. I've seen that though.
Yes, no, that's not her though. That's not Celine's sideshow.
No,
she's not into that sort of stuff, Celine. No. Right, I'm glad you had a nice time. Now Nick Quinn is going to join us a little bit later on. He's got a bit of a crook throat, so he's going to give us
the
latest odds.
He's got laryngitis.
That's crook throat. Yeah.
Yeah, that's serious type situation.
Well, it's not serious. It's just
on the eve of the spring. That's a setback.
It's just. Well, it's probably a good result, really, for most of the planet.
Probably that 67-cent bottle of water he bought last week.
Well, that's exactly right. Sparkling water.
Sort of shows the toughness of the man, I would have thought.
No, I won't say too much. There's a man in here that's had some fragility of times. I don't want to say too much and get anyone upset. So what we'll do...
Late night TV injuries.
What we'll do, Dean, is we'll have a look at the quaddie leagues tomorrow at Flemington. Now, it's just what we do around here. Back-to-back quaddies we've had on the Breakfast Club on the Friday form. So there's not much more we can do for the punters, Dino, except we'll continue doing it because that's sort of what we do. Race 6 is the first leg tomorrow at headquarters over the 2,000 metres. And it's a benchmark 78 affair. There are 16 going around at this stage from what I can tell. And Harapore, you wouldn't believe it, for DK Weir in D Lane, is the favourite out of barrier 12 at 440 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, and he's one of the numbers we're going to put in, but to sharpen the pencils for this leg of the quaddie, plenty of numbers. I think the value might be Orokai Overlord, number 10 for Hall of Famer Patrick Payne. He has been running well in slightly higher grade. I think he drops a bit in grade. It's a claim here for young Nathan Punch, and I just hope they ride him a bit quieter than they have been the last couple, and I think he's got a really good winning chance. Horses like 4 Kaching, 5 The Statesman, 13 Harapore have all got good chances, and I'm even putting in the top 2, Bling Dynasty Brigadier, and now that number 17, Sir Edwin Lansier, who's a first-timer for the Macedon Lodge team. It's one I've got to put in because I'm just wary of it. I don't really know. So, we'll be going very wide there.
Rightio, some wide activity there with lots of numbers. There's an SMS just come through, which is a good question. I should have asked it before. Thank you, whoever sent that in, anonymous at this stage. Dino, the forecast is for a little bit of rain tonight, a fair bit of rain tonight, in fact. Are we factoring that into our considerations today?
Yeah, I think we have to, Harf. As good as Flemington dries, and at the moment I think it's rated a good 3, there's rain overnight and a pretty dirty day tomorrow, to be honest. And that's often when tracks are at their worst, when it rains between races, because the track gets dug up a little bit, then the divots get filled with water, and you get a different sort of scenario. So I think, you do have to factor that in.
And just a side topic, just while I'm thinking about Flemington, have you seen the new setup at Flemington?
Only from afar. It's looking spectacular. And, I think, it's been handed over to the club now to put the finishing touches on, and I think they're going to have a couple of soft launches of different sections leading up to Cup Week.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing it myself. Headquarters for the Big Spring Carnival not far around the corner. So our numbers, if I'm not mistaken, Dino, in numerical order, 1, 2, 4, 5, 10, 13. Did you chuck 17 in?
17, yep.
17 you did too at the end. All right, that's the first leg of the quaddie at Flemington. The second leg is the Ori Star Handicap, the Group 3 feature tomorrow at headquarters over the 1,200 metres. There are 10 Well, there was 10. There is 9 because Rich Charm. Adita Clark scratch Rich Charm out of this. And Home of the Brave for James Cummings is favourite at tab.com.au just at $3.60.
Yeah, bad luck for Dita with Rich Charm. He has got a cut on the back leg, so he'll have to wait for another day. But Home of the Brave is the key runner here. He's a very talented import for the Godolphin team for James Cummings, and the Cummings name's synonymous with the Ori Star. It was the race that Bart often used to kick off his Cups horses, but this isn't a Cups horse. This is a very sharp sprinter who's been going probably a little bit keenly, but really well in his trials in Sydney. And the one thing he's got is a lot of straight track experience in his career in Europe. So I don't think that's an issue. In fact, I think that's probably why he's here. And I think he's probably the one to beat. Doesn't look a high-pressure race, and he might even take it up and just keep going. I think he's the one to beat. Voodoo Lad is racing well. He's a runner-up in a Newmarket down the straight, so he gets down the straight well. And the other one I'll be putting in is Poetic Dream, who looked very good at the trials last time in, hence he started favourite at his only Australian run and was beaten. But again, he's had two very encouraging jump outs, and I think he's probably ready to go first up. So I think the imports have a big say in this race with numbers 1 and 7. I'll be putting Voodoo Lad in as well, 1, 2, and 7.
A Brave Song had a good first up win over the 1100 at headquarters last start. Dino, any improvement there?
He did. That was a 3-year-old, end of season 3-year-old race, and a fairly restricted race. You look at his form though through, say, level weights with Kemantari last preparation, and he was beaten about 3 lengths there. So that gives him some sort of chance. I think he and probably Chamois Road are the next in line behind the main three, but I do think there's a significant gap between the three main players, numbers 1, 2, and 7.
1, 2, 7 there for the second leg. I Am a Star, have you got much hope for I Am a Star this spring?
Well, she did miss the autumn through little setbacks, and she trialled quite nicely on Monday. She ran fourth in this race last year. I think that there's probably a good mare's race for her over the spring. She won the Stock Stakes at Moonee Valley on grand final eve last year, and I would think that's the path she'd be heading down towards again, I would say.
All right, but Home of the Brave leads the numbers there, 1, 2, and 7. In fact, James Cummings will be joining Michael Felgate first up today on A Racing Pulse, so we'll find out more about Home of the Brave and the expectations from the stable after 8:30 today on A Racing Pulse. Stick around for that. The third leg is over the 1,400 metres, the open race at Flemington. There's 14 going around after the scratching of Old North for James Cummings, speaking of. And Mossendale for the Galagardis boys at a barrier 13 wide gate there, Dean, over the 1,400. $5.50, claiming Liam Reardon with 3 kilos from the 60. What are you thinking about Mossendale or the other runners in this race?
Yeah, I think he's a massive winning chance. In fact, I think he's probably the one to beat. He's just such a reliable horse. He's won 11 of 26 with 8 other placings, so he's always around the mark. Yeah. He ran very well in the Winter Championship final. He's had a freshen up. And if the predicted rain comes, with every drop of rain, his chances just improve. So I think he's got to be the one to beat. I'm expecting really good improvement tomorrow from the answer, my friend. I think he's probably been a frustration for punters, but I think of his last 8 runs, I think 7 have been at Caulfield and he hasn't run a place. But at Flemington, he's 4 starts, 2 wins, 2 seconds. So this is his track and this is his distance. So I'm expecting improvement from him. Odeon's a really good talent. Ended up running in the Queen Elizabeth against Winx back in the autumn. But he's capable of running well fresh. He's trialled up nicely and he's got a bit of soft track form if the rain does come. And Hussein Eagle, who really wasn't much beyond a 1,000-metre horse through his career, stepped up to 1,400 in the Mildura Cup and won very well, and I think Patrick Payne has probably worked him out. As he's got a bit older, that's probably his go, just to relax and run on it the longer trip. So he's next best. But 1, 6, 3, and 4. The other one maybe worth considering is Barcelona, number 14.
I was going to say, Dino, all the tipsters, not that they're any the world's greatest form analysts like you, but I'm just looking at the form guide in the paper, and they're all tipped Barcelona.
Well, he's very good on soft ground. He's had no luck at his last 2 runs. My worry is he's very deep into his preparation now. I can't see that he'd be improving, but if he gets a clearer run than he did last time at Caulfield, and his 2 wins earlier in the preparation were at Flemington, so yeah, he goes in 1, 6, 3, 4, and 14.
All right, there you go, third leg of the quaddie. Last leg, race number 9, 5, 10, check your local guides for timings. 1,700 metre affair. We've got 12 going around. Mantastic, it's a terrific name, has had an outstanding preparation this time around. Second, and a first is four runs in this campaign for DK Weir. Dino, are we expecting another first tomorrow?
Oh, I think first or second. I think he or Guizzo are the two. They ran the Quinella at Caulfield back on July 14, and Guizzo just had a beautiful run, just tracking Mantastic into the race. It was just a terrific ride from Ben Allen, and then Mantastic did a good job to win last start. So there's not a lot between them. Guizzo's got, we know him on soft ground. If the rain does come, that's not an issue for him. Mantastic's never seen it, but he's in such great form. I think they're the two main chances. Secandrabad, who won quite well at Sandown last start and does have soft track form, little freshen up from the Hayes Dabenig yard. And again, we've got a wild card in the Maslin Lodge trained Exemplar, who's got soft track form around this distance, and actually group form at the end of his last preparation. So he's a massive watch runner. So principally 5, 6, and 8, and a watch on number 3.
Rightio, that is the situation for the quaddie tomorrow at Flemington. Of course, you can hear more of Dino tomorrow morning, but that's the early look at the quaddie. We start a bit wider and we finish sort of regulations, so we'll give ourselves the chance to go 3 in a row for the Friday form quaddie. Dino, you got a formula bet for me?
I do.
Who's that?
That would be Wes White of Goonong.
Wes.
And for Wes, we are going earlier in the day. $40 the win, race 2, number 6, Prozado. And $40 the win, race 4, number 4, Harmattan. And $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 2, number 6, race 4, number 4 for Uncle Wes White of Goonong.
Uncle Wes. Everyone loves Uncle Wes. Good luck to you, Wes. Hope it's a great day for you. And that means it's a great day for Dino, which means it's a great day for us. This is all intertwined, which I quite like about the Friday form situation. Dino, well done. Thank you for your help this morning. Look forward to hearing more from you tomorrow on RSN 927, building up to a big day at headquarters.
Terrific. Thanks, Harv.
Good stuff. Dean Lester, the world's greatest form analyst and world's biggest Celine Dion lover, with us on The Breakfast Club. Nick Quinn is that guy we had chat to from the tab. He's not well at the moment, so he's got a strepsil in his throat, I'm sure. Quinny, good morning.
Thanks very much, Harv. A couple of clips from our good friend Rammer this morning that have been taken on board as well. So
I hope you heard him loud and clear.
You sound all right, Quinny.
He doesn't. He's fine. His voice when he's not in there. And I'm not around. It's a lot easier when someone's not there. So I'll get him next week. But punters have been getting stuck into a couple of runners, including one of Dino's in the formula bet. His formula bet, just recapping, race 2, number 6, Prozado, and race 4, number 4, Harmat. And that double currently comes to 8.32. But one of those runners is the best back runner on the program. Race 2, number 6, Prozado, has been 5.50 in the 2.25. Dino's had a bet before giving the tip out, and the rest of us mere mortals have to step into the 2.25 currently available. A couple of other well-backed runners on the program. Race 5, Golden Mag's been popular. Even money into $1.85 with one bet of $10,000 at the $1.90. Has looked very, very good in two career win starts to date, and hopefully can make it a perfect 3 from 3. And in the feature race, race 7 on the program, Home of the Brave, $5 into $3.50. Was initially on the third line of betting, has been backed into favourites. So it's going to be a great day at headquarters tomorrow, and there are a couple of the well-backed runners. And for my coffee bet, because I know you all had a fill-up last week, I can't wait to get more congratulatory texts like I did from Rammer last week. Rose Hill, race 5, number 2, Tactical Advantage, won very well last start, having his first start for the Joe Pride, since going to Chris Lees from Joe Pride. And I anticipate we'll make it a perfect 2 from 2, and we'll be around the $3 mark again. So hopefully that can salute, and for favourite backers across the country, Prozado, Golden Mag, and Home of the Brave can salute at Flemington.
We love a Friday morning. Boomer gets up and about, and he's doing the same thing all again today. Good morning to you, Brent.
Good morning, boys. And speaking of tips,
yes,
have we got an updated score there or no?
You currently lead the Breakfast Club.
I did not know that, Daniel.
Friday. Yes, you did.
No, well, that's not true.
It is true, Adam.
It's not true. There's an audit.
No, there's an not. Audit. You second place, first loser. Just to deal with it, mate.
Please explain.
Well, I believe I have more tips than what's been published.
No, that's not true.
Really? It's wow.
I'm happy to take the handicap because I think
there's no handicap. It's reality. And all you are at the moment is clinging on for dear life to most of the situations that you find yourself in at the Breakfast Club. The Friday face-off, you're hanging on by a thread as I'm charging. And, of course, Boomer's now overtaken the tips.
You are right. You are coming. I have got bored and probably lost focus a little bit.
Four in a row for me.
I love the confidence.
I haven't lost a putter yet. I haven't lost one. And the Friday face-off putter is up for grabs today as well. The Odyssey Red Ball putter, brand new from Odyssey, valued at $260, built specifically to address and improve two things: proper setup and proper alignment. Now, they are the most important things in putting. Check out more at odysseygolf.com. But that is the prize for the Friday face-off this week. And
we
if
need
you haven't
to
registered,
add,
rsn.net.au.
Daniel, we need to add that I am about four or five behind, I think, maybe six or seven. but I am literally, I've had five draws, so I'm waiting for this goal-kicking comp. I got a text message last night saying, boys, we're on.
Yeah.
So I've brought my footy boots, got me shorts in my car, and apparently we're not doing it now. And Whitey's dressed like he's going to a wedding, so he can't do it anyway. He's got shoes and he's got, what's going on here?
It has been pushed back, and it's the first time I've had to push it back.
Because I feel that as soon as the goal kicking's done, I'll be leading this competition by one or two.
Well, that's incorrect.
So I don't want to embarrass you guys and get too many in front, and then it's a no-brainer for the last 2 weeks. So I'm just trying to time it here. Can we commit, Rammer? Can we commit to something?
I was happy.
You were happy?
Rammer's been an issue all year with this commitment.
No.
He's a commitment phobe.
I even pumped up the footy last night.
Yeah. Half, you were texting last night. You were ready to go.
I think it's Whitey and Maisie out the back who have meetings. It's
very disappointing is what it is. Because I'll take an unassailable lead by that stage. So it could have been all over. Probably just keeps the competition going for our punter, so that's not a bad idea, I suppose.
Worries me how high you can get your leg up these days with how sort of big that sort of midsection is now.
Sorry, what?
You can hear me loud and clear.
Sorry, what?
You can hear me.
There must be some feedback issues.
Did you know
getting.
It's a rump now.
Did you know that Adam Ramanaskas, who is a huge Essendon man and is very well respected, people love watching him play. There's a Legends match being played tonight, an Essendon Legends match. A lot of former champions are coming back to play.
Just to give back
to the Essendon community. You'd think that Rammer would put up his hand and say, oh, I'll be part of that.
It's a Legends match, you said.
Well,
bang!
That's why I'm not playing, because Barry Young's playing.
Well, Barry's a legend.
I love Baz. He's one of my good mates.
Sort of the lower end of legend, and you're just below him.
Terms getting thrown around too easily these days with Baz's out there.
Were you invited to play?
No.
You weren't even invited?
I think there's only six or seven players playing. It's a corporate game.
Yeah, but you could have put your hand up to play.
I would have said no anyway.
Other than Barry Young, who's one that you think, oh, what? How come you got an invite? Come on, put your mates in.
Kepler Bradley playing?
Nah.
Ariel Freiberg?
No. If you play an AFL game, you're a legend, Boomer.
Yep, okay, it's a good call.
Nice work. Now, Boomer, what have you made of the week in footy this week?
Oh, something happening over in the West. Gee whiz, that was big, wasn't it? Yeah, I don't know really what to... Do we want to continue to talk about it? Because every radio station...
About what Sean Higgins said about... which is the broader conversation about the niggle. Now, you were on the receiving end of a lot of that through your time, and you found yourself perhaps every now and then, maybe unfortunately and maybe fortunately, in front of the tribunal for incidents. Do you think it is a legitimate part of the contest, or do you think it's just garbage and it has to go, all that sort of stuff?
Oh, I think anything above the shoulders... punch to the face needs to get, it's a 1 week ban. No worries. Not a problem at all. We see the Sydney player Jones hit.
Yeah, Zach. Yep.
Zach Jones hit Merritt last 2 weeks ago before the ball was even bounced. Yes, he got a free kick and it wasn't a great start to Sydney. Goes to tribunal and gets a fine. Now, he punched him in the chin. I just reckon that's a week. I don't think we're going to be able to stamp out punching to the chest and arms and all that sort of stuff, because if you do, you won't have any stars playing, because Fife gets tagged and held and scrapped. If you're going to pay that, are you going to pay every single free kick that he gets done for? You can't do that. Now, I know we're talking different things. Hold of the jump is not as aggressive as a punch to the
one can lead to the other.
Well, it happens. If Fife gets held 30 times in a game, which I guarantee he does, by the way, he's going to turn around and either push off, clench fish, punch to the chest off, and just gets to you and you have enough. I don't think we'll have too many guns playing our game if we stamp out every punch to the body.
Yeah, but at the same time, the free kick if the free kick was given for holding, which is a clear free kick, we potentially don't have incidents like we did and do.
Yep.
Like, you go back to the caller that we had yesterday, Marie, I think her name was.
Yes, it was, Marie, and yes.
Any punch, pay a free kick.
100%.
Regardless of how low the grade is, if you punch somebody, it's a free kick against you.
This is what... I had this argument. I played a little bit of football, so I had this argument probably half of my games. I reckon over 200 games, I said to the umpire, just pay that free kick. He elbowed me in the back.
Yeah.
Or he punched me. Or you know what the worst one is? When you're at a contest or you're standing there and your opponent comes from behind and smashes you in the back and you get the whiplash feel. Like, one of the St Kilda boys got me and I was 6 weeks later, my neck was still sore as anything. No free kick, no nothing. Because, oh, that was okay. No, it's not okay. You get whacked so many times, you're going to do something to get back. Half, if I come and sit over next to you right now in your workplace and just start smacking you in the back, holding you, pulling your head. No, don't worry about the pulling the head thing. You know, just grabbing your shirt, punching your arm. You're gonna do something to me. Trust me. In 5 minutes, you're going to say, you know what, just move and throw a little backhander.
So then, Boomer, how fair were guys like Cameron Ling, Brett Kirk, Kane Corns, guys that were renowned as really, really good taggers, were they fair or did they hold as well?
There is... You don't mind about the holding. If they don't get caught, you're going to push the limits. It's the ones off the ball, the Crowley types, yeah, that get you before the game, just comes up and smacks you in the back with an elbow. If the umpire just went, you know what, that's a free kick. I guarantee you he does not do that again, because Ross Lyon sends a message out and says, don't do that. They just kick the goal from it. That's how it needs to stop.
The interesting thing is, with what Boomer is saying, is that when the third umpire was initially... brought
that's
in.
That's what it was for.
It was actually for that sort of thing.
Well, now they've got four, haven't they?
Yeah, well, at times they do. But where it was sort of like, if it's off the contest, that third umpire is essentially looking for that sort of thing to eradicate it from the game. It seems to have got away from that, and they just become part of the general umpiring.
You know what the worst thing the umpire says to you, or to your opponent? So you get hit, and the umpire comes in and says, do that again, I'm going to pay a free kick. You say, do it again, you're going to pay a free kick? What was wrong with the first one? If it's not a free kick, don't pay it. If it's a free kick, you pay it.
If it's outside the rules, it's a free kick.
And don't get me wrong, don't get me wrong, guys. I'm definitely not saying and condoning just punching people and things like that, because we're certainly not. We don't want to go down there.
All right. Well, I want to move on to a couple of other things, because we have talked about it a lot this week. The Dan Hannabury situation.
Yes.
Now, I find this intriguing, not so much whether it will or whether it won't happen, but Alan Richardson speaking openly about, yeah, we'd have him at our football club next year when he's a contracted player. Is this something we're just going to have to get used to? Or is this, even though he's contracted, that's not seen as disrespectful to Sydney or disrespectful to the player? I don't know where I sit. It's just throwing it out there as a question.
We are getting to a stage, and Rammer might want to come over the top here and disagree or agree, but we are getting to a stage where it's NRL-like. I said this about 3 or 4 years ago, I said in 6 or 7 years, people will be changing clubs mid-year or announcing their change mid-year. Now, we've seen Lynch in a different circumstance because he's not playing because he's injured. He's come out with 4 games to go and said, I want to leave. Everyone knew Ablett was going to go. Everyone knew Dangerfield was going to go, but they never came out and said it, probably because they were still playing football at the time. The fact that Lynch has been injured has come out and said, I want to change. This will be the norm going forward in 2 or 3 years. Whether a player is playing or not playing, he will announce that he wants to leave. And as soon as now Lynch has done it 4 weeks out, someone will do it 6 weeks out next year, we'll get the halfway mark of the year and players will be saying, I won't be at this football club next year, I'm going to be traded.
I have no issue with what Alan Richardson said in regards to Dan Hannabury. I think he's asked a question about it and his response was fine. Dan fits into that category. If it is that he's available, then absolutely we'd be interested. I think that's a fair response.
I don't like it.
Why?
Because he's under contract.
It's all right. Somebody's asked him about it.
If we keep going down this path, contracts are not worth the paper they're written on. Well, they're sort of not now, are they?
They're sort of not now anyway. You work a bit differently, Remo, with the way you operate, and that's fine. But the whole industry
It's not a good look for the game.
Remo, I'm with you.
It's not a good look for the game with people breaking contracts.
I'm with you, by the way. Like, I'm a bit old school. Yeah. We played through that period. And I'm 100% with you, but the change in the guard is happening. It is happening. So I reckon we've got to get used to it.
But we need to shift that conversation back. Look, for mine, the way Alan maybe could have answered that question is, look, Dan's under contract, and until we know any different, we're not going to talk about that.
Well, that's what he said. If he's available, then absolutely we'd be interested. So he didn't say we've chased him or we're going to chase him. He said if he's available, then we'd be interested. So it's
read between the lines.
It's effectively the same thing as what you said.
All I'm saying is I don't like it.
Okay. Because I think it's interesting discussion because I think we are gradually seeing the not so much the language, but the conversation change, that it is much more, I wouldn't say appropriate, but people are more comfortable to say, oh, yeah, well, look, you know, we'd look at him, even though he's in contract. We had a different situation yesterday where Essendon came out and had to refute claims that they were into Dane Beams and speaking to Dane Beams and his management, and actually said categorically, we have not actively pursued Dane Beams at this point because it has been a rumour that's been circling for quite some time. So it's interesting because each club is doing differently. That?
Do you believe that statement by Essendon?
Well, you take everything on face value, don't you?
Yes, yes or no?
That's a no.
I don't know. Look, you know what? I would be disappointed if Essendon hasn't inquired about Dane Beams, to be honest, because I would have thought that they're not doing their job properly if they haven't asked the question.
Well, you've got to be on one side of the fence. Do you think that was the right statement by Essendon, yes or no?
I don't think they needed to comment.
Do you believe them, Remmer?
Probably not, no.
Because I must admit, I don't believe anything anyone says.
Well, the language is the problem.
When it comes to contracts.
But this is the problem. This is the problem that we continually have. Yeah. And this is why there's so much lie and mistruth in our game.
But the language is the important thing. Like that, they say, no, we haven't spoken to Dane Beams. No, because we've spoken to his manager.
Exactly.
But I think this is the thing, is that the fans get really upset at this time of year because they love all the trade speculation and the discussion. But because there are so many mistruths put out there by lots of different people, and also the landscape changes from week to week on what players might or might not do, they get frustrated because they think that when we start talking about these sorts of things, oh, it's not really happening. Because clubs will say it's not happening, but we know it is happening. So it's a really murky, unsavoury couple of months, I reckon, because people aren't telling the truth.
My issue is it always falls back on the shoulder of the player. So go back to the Dan Hanbury case. If Dan Hanbury leaves Sydney, you know, how's he viewed as a Sydney player moving forward? Oh, why did he leave our club? You know, that's shocking to do that under contract. Like, it always falls back on the player, but there's so much other stuff that's going on in the background that the player would have absolutely no idea about.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think it does come back onto the player.
Absolutely.
Anywhere near with the venom that perhaps you were suggesting it does.
100% it does.
Who was the last one? They've really got negative feedback for breaking contract.
Well, after the break, I'll let you know.
Nice work.
All right, I've got another. I know we've got to go. I want to ask Rammer about Jamie Elliott because it looks like his season is over. He's going to have hamstring surgery. How is he going? Because it's been an incredibly frustrating year for him.
Do you want me to answer it now?
Yeah, answer it now.
Half or
keep going. I'm getting abused, but keep going.
Yeah, look, he's got a low-grade strain of the hamstring, which in his last VFL game he had. He will need surgery at some stage, but it's not urgent. It's absolutely not urgent surgery. So he can have it now and completely write off his season, or he can rehab his hamstring with the thought of potentially coming back and playing towards the final series if Collingwood do make that. But he will need a form of hamstring surgery after the season's completed.
He's got no hope of playing this year, and he shouldn't.
No, probably not. But I think in his own mind, he wants to give it every possible
as
chance
a player,
that he
of course
can.
You do. Yeah, but
you
would do. His form suggest
that
he...
his form was okay. He played a couple of VFL games and his form was okay. He's an X-factor player. Look, it's a huge risk for Collingwood to consider him.
Tell him to sit it out.
I can't. That's up to him. No, it's up to his own mindset.
You can guide him.
It's not going... Whether he has surgery now or has surgery in 4 weeks' time, it's not going to affect his pre-season for 2019.
Let's get to Kevin Muscat. He's the coach of the Melbourne Victory, and my understanding is, according to all the news reports in the last couple of days, he has bought himself a second-hand car. Kevin, good morning.
Morning, Arthur. How are you, mate?
Going very well, thank you. Tell me about this Honda you bought.
Yeah, a lot of a lot of work went into it, obviously, Arf, and we're really pleased. Really pleased, and first and foremost, from a footballing perspective, that these Cascades decided to join us. As I said, you know, there was a lot of work from you know, quite a few people, and in the end, we're very pleased with the outcome. You know, I believe that it's going to give us a much greater flexibility in that front third of the park, and we're always, you know, trying to find ways and find players who are going to excite our members and fans and improve on, you know, our attacking philosophy. And, you know, I believe at this point we're in a good place.
You've lost a lot of players, some real good quality and experience from the squad for this campaign. Why that part of the ground? So were you keen to lock up that part of the ground so quickly?
I think, half as well, what's happened, I mean, and rightly so, you know, some players have departed and players who performed really well. Some players have been here, you know, quite a while, and some of the ones that have gone and rally here 12 months and served the purpose for the football club really well and for themselves and gone on to pastures new. A lot of people didn't really know too much about them before they arrived. And the other thing, on the flip side, Keske is the fifth player we've brought into the club, senior player that we've brought into the club. So I think it's been a little bit overlooked about the quality that's come into the club so far. We, as you said, you know, it's replacing people in certain areas of the park. I think, you know, defensively with, you know, Corey Brown and Storm Rue and Jorg joining the club, you know, we certainly replaced you know, the players in the back third of the park. Now we just need to look a little bit further afield in the midfield and in the front line.
And you talked before about the hard work required to get Keske. How did you say his name correctly?
Keske.
Right. Keske. Chasing a guy like Keske, who's got a fair resume and is obviously a very, very popular player across the planet. How do you go about wooing him? What do you try to do to get him to come across?
Look, at the end of the day, I always fall back on one thing, you know, pure blatant honesty, you know, gets you the desired outcome, gets you an outcome, you know, very, well, quickly, really. And if it's the desired outcome, great. If it's not, well, you move on to someone else. And, you know, as you can imagine, he wasn't short of offers.
Yeah.
You know, this was something that was the FFA, I mean, well, the A-League, sorry, and Fox Sports and... put together a fund to try and attract players that maybe and give support to the clubs that maybe it'll be, you know, out of the price range of clubs to give everything a little bit of a boost. And that was encouraging for me only if it was a football fit. And, you know, I'll reiterate that, you know, there was, you know, over the last two or three years, maybe half a dozen to eight players that have been, you know, brought to my attention and, you know, by our chairman, and, you know, I've looked him in the eye on all occasions. I said, well, if you ask me if it's a football decision, I'm not interested. And simply because, you know, I didn't see that the benefits from a football perspective were far outweighed by a commercial perspective. And on this occasion, you know, I was immediately interested, and the first thing I did was ask the FFA to put me in contact directly with him, because there's no point discussing, you know, financials and commercial aspects of a contract if, you know, I didn't feel it was right from a personal perspective. And, you know, the three or four conversations I had with, you know, Keske were, you know, tremendous and really gave me an insight and got to know the person. And, you know, at the moment, you know, you read off earlier, half, that, you know, he's had a decorated career and you know, everyone's aware of that. And, you know, what you will be aware of in the coming months is, you know, the type of person that's coming is an unbelievable character, certainly, you know, heavily driven and motivated person. And after, you know, I'd analysed that, you know, Keske would give us so much in the football perspective, to have, you know, that behind him immediately, finding out about the person and the player, it was a no-brainer that I wanted to pursue. And the And then naturally, after the first conversation with his management, and then the player, his management, who's his brother, flew to Melbourne to meet me, I think 48 hours after the conversation. That's how professional and clinical these guys are.
Hey, Kev, we've been talking about AFL trades this morning, and we're talking about a pool of 800 players. Your recruiters and list management staff, What type of pool are they dealing with to get these type of players into into the victory?
Well, as you could understand, I mean, being the world game, there's the numbers of players available at this time of year is, you know, I'd say in the hundreds of thousands. but the reality is, if you cut that pool down into what we can afford and all those type of things, it becomes very, very narrow. And then you fall into the bracket then of players who a certain age group and, you know, players are looking for a different challenge. You know, for example, on the other scheme of things, we signed Georg Niedermeyer, who's, you know, plied his trade in the Bundesliga in Germany, the top division there, for, you know, 12-odd years, and he's 32 years old, and he wants a fresh challenge, and, you know, he's had some challenges in the last couple of years himself at his club, and you get players at that from that end who, you know, looking for another challenge and looking maybe to get away from the hustle and bustle of the, you know, 60-odd games a year in Europe. So there's a few ways that, you know, certainly we, you know, strategise in how we go about getting players, but you look at that and the lure of Europe and look at the finances of Europe and South America, but you can look a lot closer now because, you know, traditionally, you know, we couldn't compete financially with Japan. Then it was Korea. In recent years, it's been China, where, you know, we just simply can't compete financially. But you'd be surprised to know that the so-called smaller nations in Asia that we can't compete with financially now. And I'm talking about Vietnam, I'm talking about Malaysia. These countries here have gone ahead of us in terms of what they spend financially. So it's a matter of getting to the player and speaking to the player. And as I said earlier, you know, just you know, speak truthfully. And the one thing we do have that you know, is always a massive advantage for myself and our football club is, you know, I send a lot of videos and speak to them about our facilities here in Melbourne, about the city of Melbourne, the country in Australia. But that can only get you so far, boys. It's the first thing everyone says, look, it's not about the money. And I've quickly learned that it's not about the money until you start speaking about the money.
The Australia A squad has assembled in Brisbane for a training camp ahead of the Quad Series in India commencing 17 August. Six matches they will play against the three other combatants. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Alex Carey is able to do. The young Aussie cricket star has been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem, buddy. Thank you for coming on. Now, what happens in this training camp getting ready for this one-day series?
Yeah, so all the boys just gather here in Brisbane, and then it's good for some guys to, you know, get outdoors and run around in the sun. I know there's a few guys in Melbourne, a few guys in South Australia, and you know, over in Perth that hasn't seen too much sun this winter. So and obviously guys come from overseas that have been playing. So it's just a really good opportunity for the guys to come together and you know, train outdoors and get on some of the spinning wickets and, you know, try all the conditions up here as well. So, yeah, it's been a good week so far. One more day of training and then off we go on Monday.
So how much of it is technical improvement and practice, and how much of it is team?
A lot of it is about, you know, getting the team together. But most of the guys now know each other as well. We play so much cricket against each other and cricket together with the BBL franchises. So you know, it's pretty easy for a squad like this to come together, and I think the technical side of it, we know what we want to do going over to India. We know it's going to be, you know, sort of the spinning conditions, and it's just about honing our skills and, you know, like I said, trying all the different wickets, and we've got lots of spin bowlers, and, you know, also not forgetting the big quicks as well. So, yeah, it's just a good variety.
Alex, it's been a fascinating little period for you, pretty much since last summer. You had that great big bash period. You've been in and around the Australian team. You've represented Australia now in this training phase. What have you learned about your cricket and about yourself through this period?
Yeah, it has been a really good 12 months for me. So, you know, I was really excited, obviously, going to England and being a part of that series. Obviously the results didn't go to plan, but so much to learn from that and seeing the best go about their business. So, you can take a lot out of that. And I know our boys will learn a lot. We saw England just play sort of fearless cricket, and they've got some confidence at the moment, and they got off to some flyers.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.